Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 52. 1 year of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Announcements this week. We got a new newsletter from Stars. It looks like we're going to maybe be getting these on a Saturday.
From I don't here know, on but out. Definitely it seems weekly.
And they seem to be episode specific, because there's a lot of time spent in Claire's surgery, and they spent a lot of time, well, not a lot of time, the entire newsletter was about items found in and around Claire's surgery and how they created it, which I found very interesting. I thought it was such an interesting take on her surgery. It was way bigger for me than I thought it was going to be, at least the way it was described in the books, but it works.
Yeah, it seemed like totally more works. Of a closet in the books.
Yeah, like it was just like this little hidden, forgotten place in the bowels of the earth. We had a couple Q&As this week. One was with Lotte Verbeek, our gaily. And it was a Twitter Q&A. We also got a Q&A with Graham McTavish. We got some photos this week from Stars. What kind of dog is that?
I don't know. Someone said when we shared it on Facebook, someone said, what a beautiful Irish wolfhound. I don't know if this is a deerhound. I don't know if it's an Irish wolfhound.
It's kind of brindly. Like the coloring is
the
brindle.
The whole thing with the guy's expression, maybe it's just like the film or the filter, I don't know what you call it, that they use. This almost looks like a painting.
Oh, yeah. No, I can see
that. I mean, with the guy who's smiling, bending over, chuffing the dog or whatever that is, he almost looks like his face has been painted.
Yeah.
And the dog almost looks fake.
The dog is huge.
It is, but it almost looks fake. It's so beautiful. And it looks like definitely its fur was painted. Not painted, but it looks like a painting.
Okay. I'm like, but it wasn't. It's a dog. And they naturally come in that color.
But, yeah, I wish we saw the face.
I know.
And I hope we see more of it.
Oh, we'll have to keep a lookout for it. Maybe in the gathering. We got a shot of Sam Heughan holding some kind of, well, they say it's a dirk. Balancing a dirk in his palm, which is very impressive looking. It's obviously not very sharp, but somebody commented, well, at least we know it's not rubber.
Interesting. It was kind of a full-on something Jamie would do. Just well, like, you know,
that's
hanging
the
out.
Smallest bladed weapon we've seen so far on the series. They also have apparently started, I'm sure you're all familiar with the Hey Girl phenomenon that was Ryan Gosling pictures, that they would put Hey Girl and then have some little phrase on the bottom. Well, it looks like we've started to have some Hey Lassies.
That's
me. And the first one is that I've seen is a picture from this Claire's
episode.
Room, episode two, when she's treating his wounds before the hearth. And it says, Hey Lassie, care to treat my wounds while I'm shirtless? And I think this could be
if they
very
continue
interesting.
With this.
I want them to continue with this.
It just makes you wonder where they may go with this. Because all the Hey Girls are very tongue-in-cheek. With the slight sexual nature, obviously.
They are, but
seductive, sexual.
But if they want to make it work 100%, it needs to be a shot where he's looking at the lens.
That's true.
Because all of the Ryan Goslings are all, he's always,
that's
seems to be making
true.
Eye contact. So that's my only critique of this, but I like the idea. I
but
think they should follow
Jamie
through.
Never looks at the camera because he's not a model or an actor. Jamie's a character. So this is on a media spread. Maybe if someone takes or Stars takes one of the shots that Sam has done for media and then puts it over there, that would be more equivalent.
We'll see. We shall see. So in casting news this week,
it's been a while since we've had some casting
news.
And I still want to learn about McCranick.
Of course.
We're waiting.
I know. They have to hire him. If they've hired this guy, they have to hire McCranick soon.
We hope.
But what was exciting about this one is his actual connections to the Outlander series.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actor Fraser Hines. He himself is actually the actor who inspired Diana Gabaldon. Who inspired Diana Gabaldon to write the entire series. His appearance on Doctor Who.
Not to write the entire series or to place the series. She was already going to write a series, but she was looking for inspiration.
He inspired Outlander.
Yes. He inspired the setting of the place. She knew she wanted to write something, But it was seeing him in a kilt.
I agree, but anything other than him in a kilt as the inspiration, and it wouldn't have been Outlander.
A different book.
It wouldn't have been Outlander. That is true. That's all I'm saying. And so that's pretty exciting. He's going to be playing Sir Fletcher Gordon, who is
the governor
of the
Wentworth.
And then Diana posted a picture of her with her two Jamies, with her, with Sam, and Fraser Hines.
There was also an article in the Huffington Post with a woman named Judy Lowstetter, who owns Celtic Journeys and whose company does Outlander tours of Scotland. And Karen Henry of Outlandish Observations went on one of these trips in 2012. And so she was sharing this interview, this article from the Huffington Post on her blog. And that's where we found it and saw it and shared it through her page. So thank you for sharing that, Karen. This is a really neat Q&A with someone who really knows about the Outlander themed tourist industry and what people want, have wanted, and maybe even how it's changing, because the demand is only going to grow.
You know, if I was going on an Outlander tour, I really just want them to take me someplace where I can meet lots of single dudes in kilts.
Oh.
That's all.
No high expectations.
None. They also released, it looks like, the French edition of the tie-in version, I should say. Of
just the cover.
The cover? The tie-in cover? Came out in France. It's titled Les Chardons et les Tartans. I have no idea. I don't speak French, but you can leave that in.
Now, this is not a new translation. This is just a new edition of, I'm guessing, the same translation, but with a new cover, the series tie-in cover.
Now, it means something and the tartan.
Yes.
So what is this? What is Les Chardons? The thistle and the tartan, apparently, is what it translates to. It's very interesting and apropos.
Yeah, I never would have ever guessed that. Mm-mm.
And lastly, before we go into our discussion of this week's episode, we were delighted to get something very new. I don't think we've had anything like this come out. But friend of the show, Ailey Grant, got together with our Gallic coach, Agov, and
the show's Gallic coach, not our Gallic coach.
Well, ours, like, we as a group, we consider him ours.
As fans, okay, yes. As Outlander fans.
As Outlander fans, he's our Gallic coach, Agov. They got together and released a song
whose purpose it was to help raise funds and support for the Yes campaign in Scotland.
The verses are in Lowland Scots language, as used by Robert Burns. The chorus is in standard Scottish English, and the refrain at the end is in Scottish Gaelic. So Scotland's three indigenous languages are all represented.
And that is taken from an article, verbatim from an article in The Scotland Now, at the Daily Record.
And we'll link to it if you haven't heard it yet. And I'm sure if you follow us, you follow Ailey. But if you haven't heard it yet, it's such a cute little song. It got stuck in my head for like an entire afternoon. I was humming it. I could not pronounce any of the words, but I was humming it. So I suppose that wraps up our announcements and on to our discussion of episode 3.
I was so expecting you to say read along because we did that 41 times. At least 30-something
it's
times.
It's coming back. Oh, but we didn't mention this.
What?
Happy anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. 52 episodes.
52 episodes. That means we've been doing this for a year.
To us. And honestly, I was about to say, how do we celebrate? Well, honestly, we probably celebrated last night and we had sangria. And you'll hear it, hopefully, in our episode.
We'll share our celebration.
It was a little early celebration, but yeah, so thank you for listening to however many, whether you've listened to one episode and this is it, or every single episode, or anywhere in between. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that you stick around and join us for, of course, all of our discussions and the upcoming DIA read-along.
Absolutely, and if nothing else, thank you for giving us a reason to do this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we would probably still be doing it even if we had, like, two or three listeners.
Even if our family, like I said, our two or three family or friends, we would still do it. But you guys rock, and thank you so much for all the support and feedback of all kinds that you've given us. Thank you to all of our guests that we've ever had, and we look forward to many more guests over the coming...
We got some stuff in the works.
So, discussion of episode 1033?
Not 103.
103. The Way Out.
Okay, so before we start...
Written by...
Even before this.
Okay.
Even before we start this, I want to point out that I took notes. This is
and
huge.
And thank goodness, because Summer is a lazy bastard. Can we take that off?
No, leave it. I don't think that that's really lazy. The case.
She's just not as nerdy or anal as I am.
You know, I think I'm really just more of a slacker. I mean, I do the work. I just don't always, you know, bring it all with me to class.
Okay.
Point is, I think I need a little extra pat on the back from you, Ginger, this week for me taking notes.
Afterwards, maybe.
All right.
So this episode was written by Anne Kenny, this season the only female writer, but the first one of hers, and also directed by Brian Kelly. And I'm starting something new, and I will make it retroactive, but we will also provide IMDb links to each of them as well, the director and the writers.
Okay, so if we're going to start at the top and work our way through, I would like to point out that I thought that it was a brilliant use of music at the top. The tail of the opening credits was done with the harp, which was kind of evocative of the bard. So we were going to see the bard later, so I thought that was a nice play-in leading into that scene. So when it was... I'm not going to lie. I've watched this episode a couple times. But the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, that's different. And then I saw the episode, and then I went back and watched it again, and I was like, oh my gosh, I get it. It's beautiful. It's perfect. I love it.
Yeah, Bear tries to tie things in.
It was too clever for me the first time through. But the second time through, I went, ah, got it, you guys.
Okay, so the first opening scene is Claire and... I almost said John.
Oh, it's not Lord. John.
Claire and Frank at the railroad station. And I got to admit, I got teary-eyed. I loved... This is the kind of thing I would hope that book readers, book lovers, will enjoy. It's something that definitely is not part of the books, but is needed in the visual medium, and it fits so perfectly.
It does, and what I think is good about this is if you go back and listen, or not listen, but read Diana's interviews that she's had, she talks about there's new stuff that's included, but
it doesn't mess
anything up, and it could totally live within the realm of what she's already written.
Absolutely.
And kind of like an added bonus, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I thought this was definitely an added bonus.
When she says, give up the ship and start speaking German, I raise my hand. Like, yeah, ich kann, wir werden. And then on one of her lines, as they say, that's my cue before she gets on the train. I don't know why this touched me. I got a little teary-eyed, and she said it very romantically and very poetically, or at least the line was very poetic. And I loved her delivery.
I liked this whole scene. And
it made me tear up. Not tingle.
Dirty. They did mention the fact that it was a role reversal between the two of them, with her getting on the train and staying gigging. Her gigging
no,
on.
No, I thought getting it
no,
on.
No, not getting it on.
That was episode one.
No,
summer. That's
right. No, with her getting on the train and him staying behind, that it was a nice little role reversal. They actually mentioned it within the scene, so I thought it was a little clever thing. But I thought about that as they were getting on. I was like,
I loved the line, welcome to the 20th century.
It sounded a little Irish.
Well, she is Irish.
I know she is, but it doesn't always peek through, and I kind of heard it a little bit there.
And I thought it was... I love the use of her full name when Frank says, Claire Beecham Randall, promise you'll return to me. So, on the one hand, I like the use of her full name, except Elizabeth was gone.
I know, I was going to say, if you're going to call it out.
Do it!
Do the whole thing.
On the other hand, I love the line, but I found it interesting because the whole scene is evocative of these 40s movies, right?
Right.
Someone going off to war. It's usually the man, obviously. But this is not their last goodbye. We know this because we know, even just the first three episodes, you know. But
it's apparently
it's not
their
funny.
It's their first big goodbye.
Yes, and it's not funny, but I wrote the word funny. It's kind of funny how here she was. There was a great chance for her, mostly her, because she was on the front. Less so for him, because he was in MI6 and stayed mostly on the island. But there was a decent chance that something could have happened to her. It was a freaking war. A world war. A world war. And she came back. So on the one thing that she could have definitely had a high chance of dying or getting maimed or getting hurt, she's absolutely fine. And then she goes to pick flowers one day. And oopsie.
This is so true. But at the end, he's saying goodbye, he's like, you know, come back to me. And she was like, I will, Frank. And I thought to myself, promises, promises.
Don't make promises you can't keep. Okay, are we ready to go on?
Yeah.
The fake out witch scene.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Okay, first of all,
last week,
I called
first
it.
First of all, you did call it.
Okay.
You did call it last week, but I wrote, well played, Stars, well played.
No, you, well hold played, on. Ron Moore.
My point is, last week at the end, and I talked about it, I guess, mostly in the podcast, but last week on the previews for this episode, you saw that little clip, and of course you didn't see the resolution, or you didn't see that it was fake. But that actually, if you think about it logically, as a book fan, it's the only thing that makes sense, unless they were taking a huge left turn, which people, including myself, I wouldn't say I was cranky, but there were fans who were having cranky pants over this whole thing, and I get it. That's why I say, well played, Stars. Right. Well played, Ron Moore.
You know what, though? It's not the first instance of that in that, no. In that the teaser trailer they gave us last mm-hmm. week. And I say that because the other thing that they said was they had Claire going, my healing gifts are a gift yes. from God. And I was like, she would never be so, like, pompous about it. But if you go back in the scene, she goes, a priest once told me, blah, uh-huh. blah, blah, which sounded a lot less, like, full of herself. But back to the scene with Mrs. Fitz. I thought that this scene was a good use of Mrs. Fitz for exposition.
I thought you were going to say a good use of nudity.
No.
I was like, because it was very tasteful. She's just like, look, I'm getting a bath. I'm getting dressed.
On that note, there this was go. The first week that I would have felt comfortable watching this with my six-year-old.
I still wouldn't have, but
I know, but I
understand what you're saying.
It was like the cleanest episode.
And it might be
so
the
far.
Only one.
But I thought it was a good use of Mrs. Fitz for exposition because yes. she mentioned the whole, oh, your skin is so nice.
Mm-hmm. Haven't seen anybody like past the age of 7 or 8 or 9
right.
with skin unmarked by illness or injury.
Exactly.
And part
these
of
are
this,
all things that kind of went on.
That come in.
Yeah.
That will carry on, but. Yes.
But there's never a conversation of that in the book. It's just something that Claire
no, exactly.
observes.
And this is also the first we hear of The Gathering. Talks
true.
About it. Just get ready. I think it's the next episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Episode 4, The Gathering.
Episode 4, where we will be seeing Diana Gabaldone.
Yes,
on
her,
film.
What do you call it?
Cameo?
Thank you. I'm like her Capizio? No.
No, not a Capizio. That's a dance store.
It is. The next thing I took notes on was Claire's surgery. Horse dung, LOL, is what I wrote. And I have to say, I don't know if this... No, she's a good actress. I'm not putting it past her. But part of me thinks that maybe they put live wood lice or whatever that truly was in that jar. And she was just supposed to take it out. And she didn't know they were actually alive. Because homegirl, like, flipped a gasket.
This,
she
but
did
what
so
I will
well.
Say is this was the best utterance of...
Yes,
Jesus
I wrote that down.
Roosevelt Christ.
I wrote... Her JHRC was the best so far. Go, Katrina Clare.
Yeah, no.
It was awesome. This is like, there is no 100% because the only thing we have is who?
Ourselves? I don't know.
No.
Oh, Davina?
Davina. And of course, Davina does no wrong. Pretty much no wrong. But
well, she
all
had,
we,
no, we
have,
had nothing else to compare
we
it to.
We have nothing
we
else
it.
To compare it to. So when we first heard it the first two times, and it wasn't just us, a lot of Outlander fans were like, not really with it. This was great because it had an entirely different intonation, entirely different rhythm.
Well,
it was faster. I loved it.
But here's how I felt about it. Now, granted, take this with
and
the grain
really
of salt.
She was really freaked.
Take this with the grain of salt of knowing that I know that this was filmed months ago.
Sure.
That being said, I felt like she heard our last episode, took a note, and made
impossible.
It better.
But I think it was the context. Maybe
totally.
She was really freaked out, or maybe she was. She's acting anyway, but I'm wondering, kind of like the whole thing with the shower scene in Psycho, where they used cold water and didn't tell her. She freaking screamed so much because they used cold water on her. I'm wondering if she knew her lines, she knew what she had to do. I'm wondering if we'll ever find out if that was like a plant.
Well, if
she
ever,
didn't
if
know.
If we ever get a face to face again, it'll be one of the things we can ask. We'll start a list.
So I'm still making my way through. Angus versus Murta. I'm getting much
seriously?
Better.
Seriously?
Well, I'm getting much better since the ponytail and the head
they
hair
hang
off
out
the bangs.
All together, the entire... Angus Murta. Sorry,
hello.
I thought you meant Angus Rupert.
No,
sorry.
I know Rupert from anyone. Angus and Murta. And the one thing I had... And I said this before, so just stay with me, because it'll probably say it for once every other episode. Then I remember the ponytail that I said. I called it a ponytail. And also, Murta is Jamie's kin, so we know that... More importantly, Murta is in Jamie's corner no matter what. So someone who's, quote-unquote, spying or watching Claire would not be Murta. He has better things to do. So, as I have kind of started to call them, I think I called them before, Angus and Rupert, I'm calling the Highland Contingent. They're too funny. They are
like,
the best.
They're like the Keystone Cops.
Exactly.
Now, so, what I did write down in this on my notes, because I made them, so I need to refer to them. was that I said, I was like, Angus is hilarious in this episode. Like, every scene I see him and he's cracking me up. And with his little tiny legs and his kilt.
Angus has little legs?
Oh my God, he's so petite.
I gotta watch that more. He's so petite.
Like, it's all I see.
He's more petite than Murta. Have we seen him next to Murta much?
Murta in this episode was mostly sitting down. That's the most we saw was him at the table when they were eating dinner. But Angus was traipsing around after Claire, like chasing her through the entire episode.
Having a hard time keeping up, too.
And every time he showed up in a scene, God bless the kilt, but all I saw was his little legs running after her. And I was like,
I love
he's
these
so
actors.
Petite.
They're amazing. So Claire is in her surgery, right?
Yes.
And she is being watched. But then later on, the contingent, are in the kitchen. And they're in their cups, and I love it. And in the kitchen, there's a breaking of a dish, and we hear Mrs. Fitz refer to the fact that the woman...
Columns
something
maid. Chambermaid.
Chambermaid. Her son had died. And that's the first thing we hear about something kind of, unsettling.
Right. And this episode. And it was also something new. This is not something
absolutely.
From the books.
First thing in this episode
and
that
And I noticed that when we get to the scene where we are introduced, when she meets Galus in the gardens, is when I started to think that this was going to be exchanged, that this was going to be used in place of the changeling.
And which we're not going to talk about.
Okay, fine.
Because we don't know, because the changeling doesn't even happen now. But I think as far as evidence for a certain thing that happens in an episode, I think after the hiatus, yes, I think this thing will be referred to.
Well, the way that it was played out, it was given all of the same importance.
Yes.
of that, the changeling.
Don't go near them. Don't
right.
do this. Okay.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it. No one needs to go near. And then when Jamie came back and helped her.
Yes.
Kind
and
of
we
deduce
haven't
it.
Gotten to that scene.
Okay,
yet.
Fine.
So if this episode could be named anything other than The Way Out, I would call it Let's Cross Ourselves.
Because everyone
there
was crossing
so
themselves.
Much crossing themselves. Only people. I mean, we didn't see. Oh no, I didn't see Dougal. I didn't notice Dougal. Did he? I didn't notice him. But the only ones who didn't cross themselves as far as large or big characters would have been Claire and Galus. And that's a little... But Colm did.
But I don't think Dougal
Rupert
was
did,
involved
Mrs.
in any
did.
Of the scenes.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. He may not have been. But my point is so many... I mean, Jamie did. So many other people did.
Yeah.
So I thought it was interesting. And then they were talking about the old Nick. And I kept thinking Saint Nick. So that I know that's not what they meant. And I knew, from the context, it was referring to the devil.
Yes.
And, or some bad spirit or something.
Did you
and
Google
I
that?
Looked it up.
Of course you did.
Of course I did.
Of course
I have to Google
you
everything.
Did.
It is an English appellation for the devil. So you say, why not Scottish? Well, it just means the English language,
See,
not necessarily English.
And I just want to point out the differences between Ginger and I. Because when Ginger...
I give a crap.
No, wait. When Ginger heard this episode, she was like, I bet there's a reason for that. Let me Google it. And when I heard it, I was like... Oh, maybe somebody that lived at the Kirk was named Nick.
Well, that gets better. So then we're in Colm's room, and I'm so happy. Oh, and I wrote down a little note. This is funny. I think it's funny. Do you know how many times I've written the word Colm? Colm. Like, every 100% of the time. 100% of the time, I cannot write Colm, I write Colm. Anyway, so Mr. Taylorman, also brand new to the series, brand new to the story. Mr. Taylorman's in trouble, and I wrote that's different from the book. And the purpose here, I believe, is to show Colm's status as Laird and how he is a very proud man, how much in charge he is, and that he is, no matter what others may think, he's not ashamed of his disability as far as what he allows himself to be seen as.
What I liked about this scene was that I loved the interchange between him and the tailor because we all know, for those of us who are familiar with the series, that Dougal is... The legs and the...
and the cook!
Of the two of them.
Or should
of the,
I say...
Of the Mackenzie.
I'm sorry. I mean, I won't take it out. But from now on, if we say that, I'll say cock-a-doodle-doo.
Or back. What I think is that Colm, for me, has always been the head and the heart of the clan.
Okay. Yes.
So, what I enjoyed about this was that, for me, he also became the badass. Because this was, like, B.A. This was totally
yes.
B.A.
Yes.
And the way he pulled that, like, knife
there
out. It was
a knife. I think you're right.
I'm not sure exactly what kind of knife it was. But it was definitely a knife. But I thought this was the first time we've seen him be anything other than... I mean, he's
the
been most... Yeah.
Almost.
And, I mean, even when he was, not even terse with Claire, but stern with Claire when he was saying that she was going to stay as his guest unless she tried to leave.
Mm-hmm.
He still wasn't super menacing. His strength was the fact that Dougal was going to back him. But in this episode, I think that we saw that he had more strength to him than we saw.
Oh, he's definitely, yeah.
And pretty much, I have on every page, I have pretty much written Colm's legs with exclamation points. Because every time I see them, I'm like, Colm's legs!
So I will say that when Colm, he didn't say exactly what he was doing, and he just goes around the table and he drops Trow. And I was like, okay, well, I know from the book what's going to happen, but he doesn't tell her first.
I brought you here for an entirely different matter. Exactly. And then he starts opening his pants. I was like, oh.
And it involves me not having pants on. And she's like, oh, I cannot put words in her mouth.
No,
I
was thinking, she had that look on her face where she was like, really?
It was just like a little awkward. And then I wrote, Colm's buns. As someone who does not have Toulouse-Lautrec, but has had lower back issues, massage is one of the best natural ways to treat or help with pain management. So I feel you, Colm.
Okay, so what I wrote here
is don't get personal?
No, was first I wanted to point this out because it made me laugh. I was like, I mentioned Colm being a badass, and then I wrote, speaking of asses.
I was about to say, speaking of asses. Colm's ass.
But moving on to that, what struck me about this interchange was him saying, so Davy Beaton used to give me this massage. And I was like, Davy Beaton was there for a week and a half before he died.
No. He died within a week of getting a fever. We don't know how long he was there.
It made it sound like he was barely there.
He died within a week of getting a fever. We don't know how long he was there. But
in the book it was implied that he wasn't there long.
But not a week.
But apparently these massages were made of magic because
they were magic. They were beaten magic
because they stuck in his head so securely that he's like, somebody else needs to do this for me.
Am I the only one who thought as he climbed on the table because of the CGI, it's not Colm's fault? Gollum.
No.
It looked like Gollum's feet or his legs. Yes.
Gross.
I am not gross.
No, but I did wonder if he had a stunt butt.
I don't think so. Why would he have a stunt butt?
I don't know, but that
was
like...
His butt was fine.
It was perfect, which made me think it was perhaps a stunt butt.
Summer talks about the butt. Okay, so I wrote, seriously, after Colm said the lad went into the Black Kirk, also not in the book, by the way, he crossed himself while lying down. It looked awkward and uncomfortable, but at least he's consistent, as is the show. Again, this show could be subtitled Crossing Ourselves. Seriously, I'm not lying. So Colm says, sometimes I wonder what I did to make the devil punish me like this. This line of thought, as well as what happens later in the episode, is actually a wonderful juxtaposition of 20th century science and knowledge against 18th century superstition and deeply held religious belief.
But in exchange for a massage, for a butt massage, she earned a night's entertainment. She earned a personal invitation to a night's entertainment.
It was not a butt massage. It was a lower back massage. There is a difference.
She was really close to his butt.
She was close to his booty, but no, sorry. What's my favorite word? Bottom.
Bottom.
She was close to his bottom.
Bottom.
But she didn't fondle or massage his bottom.
And that we saw. We don't know what was happening when he was like, and she was like, did I hurt you?
He never made that noise.
But he made a sound of ow, and she was like, I'm sorry, did I hurt you? And he was like, no, it actually feels better. And after that, she got an invitation to the night's entertainment
in
the hall.
Okay, carry on. Going on. So in the hall, as they start the entire shot, the shot moves up from behind the chandelier with the candles, and that shot, as they moved, of the huge chandelier with all the candles,
so pretty,
gorgeous,
right?
That was in one of the first previews.
Yes,
remember that?
Agreed.
And also, Dougal being kind of charming with Claire.
That was
Stop
charming.
Stop kidding. Well,
seriously, his version of flirting needs some tweaking.
Is that what you wrote?
That is my note.
So you agree, though, he was trying to be charming.
It was or something. Attempt. But he's like, that fettle cat we picked up on the way.
And I wrote, ouch. Stop hitting on her, Doogie.
Doogie, is that what we're going to call him now?
No, just me.
Doogie.
So, also, the Rhenish, and it comes back again, is so popular.
I want some. And
I have mine tonight.
Right. You do not need any more Rhenish.
Stop
good.
It. Go on. Stop it. Go on.
Okay, so, Claire sits next to Lyra, introduces herself. And introduces herself. And I want to say that this whole scene was, like, so awkward.
I got
so like,
very awkward. You felt bad for her.
This is the first time I have ever felt bad for
Lily. So what does that mean? Nell Hudson? Brava. Such a good job. Well, at Lyra, period. But also making her, at least
a sympathetic
for now,
character.
Sympathetic.
Seriously, what I wrote was, Jamie, ... open mouth. Insert foot. Because seriously, it's like everything you said, I was like, oh, awkward. I felt bad for her, calling her a snot-nosed brat. And I get it.
He's I don't think he was calling her that. He was calling the bunch of kids that she was hanging out with.
But he was insinuating that she was one of them. And I was like, oh, dude, you're just, like, laying it on. It was awful.
Okay, so, Girl in the Bard, beautiful voice. And nice playing was so understated. I wanted to hear more of him. And we hope we will.
You know, maybe it'll be on a soundtrack. That would be awesome.
And I loved it when Claire says to him, are you implying I'm intoxicated? I was like, yes, Claire, we are.
Well, what I wrote
she
about
plays drunk really well.
The music is I said...
Oh, sorry, music.
I said, I agree with Claire. Beautiful music. Don't understand a word.
And he's a Welshman in there, but was he singing in Gaelic? Because Jamie was translating pretty well.
I mean,
or at least
don't
later on he did.
Don't look at me for a translation. I have no idea what any of them are saying, ever.
So... Jamie asked Claire to help him with his bandage. He's chafing, I think. Right? Is that what it said?
He says he's chafing.
And I wonder if the script actually gave her a direction to scoff at him. But seriously, sitting right there, she goes, right, what, right now? That's the second time she's made that noise. The first time was after she tells off Rupert and she turns around and goes, well, and it's like an episode. And this time she's like, right now?
Well, did you see her face when he asked her how many glasses, if she's, what she was drinking? She was like, running. She's like, I've had two.
I mean three.
And like the facial expression she made was so like modern to me that I was like, okay.
Totally.
Totally modern.
And it looks like sugary, but it actually says surgery.
Okay, so, before we go to that. Uh-huh. So he says he's going to take her back to her rooms. Does she sleep in the surgery now? Because he took her back to the surgery, and I was like, did she sleep there? Didn't she have a room?
He took her back there, but then when they got there, he said, I actually don't need your help, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to get you back to your surgery. He didn't say rooms.
Right, but the indication was, like, he was taking her there for the night. Like, I was like, is that where she sleeps?
I have no idea.
Because I don't see any sleeping chambers in there, and Mrs. Fitz was definitely not helping her dress in the surgery. But... I did love Jamie's lilting accent in this scene.
I love Jamie's lilting everything.
Well, we don't get to see a lot of him talking because it's mostly a Claire-based drama. So, and he's not front and foremost all the time.
Front and center?
That too.
Okay.
Point being, whenever we get long stretches with... Whenever we get long stretches with him speaking, I kind of just go, and listen.
And then to the garden.
No, before that.
What happened?
I want to say that I've never heard anyone flirt so well while saying things like scabbed and no drainage.
Oh, gosh, Miss Summer.
I know. That's my point. Like, they were looking at each other, and she's like,
they were wadding each other?
They were looking at each other.
Looking. No, I'm like, that's like episode.
No, it was like all the looks they were giving back and forth and saying things like scabbed and no drainage. And I was like, why is this still hot?
Okay, it's not. Stop it. Okay, gross. So in the garden, she runs into Galus.
And can we talk about the gardens?
Oh my gosh.
I would love to have those gardens.
I want that garden.
Like it was.
I want you to have that garden because I don't want to take care of it, but I want to come enjoy it.
But it was like you stepped down into it.
I want to come pluck your gardens.
Dirty.
Never.
You like step down into it and there's like all of those like the trellises and all of the.
I think that was it.
Growing.
Everywhere. And it was just beautiful. And I loved. So they get to talking and we find out from Galus, right, that Father Bane wants to do an exorcism on this poor boy who's ill. So another boy has fallen ill, right? So the first one already died from, they didn't say what really, except that he went to the Kirk, got sick.
They're just saying his possession is what killed him. They couldn't save him. But what I did notice about the scene is what I was questioning in my head while watching this. I'm like, I wanted to know if Galus really believed it.
Oh, well,
How much of it is she committed to being, you know.
I have something to say about that, and we'll get
there. How much is just her testing Claire?
So I have something to say about that.
Okay.
So Claire questions Galus, and Galus questions Claire. One of the things that Galus asks Claire about is, do you not believe in demonic possession, Claire? And we see Galus's interaction with Claire start to inquire more, little by little, more and more about her. And kind of testing her. Didn't you do that?
I totally felt like it was a test.
And then Galus says, and this was from the teaser for this episode, have you ever found yourself in a situation with no earthly explanation? And Claire does not answer.
She spends the entire episode not answering her.
Well, no. She gives up a little bit of stuff. Not too many details, but enough stuff to make Galus even more interested up in her room boudoir thing.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
We will. Another Galus insight. She says to Claire, people believe the boy is possessed, Claire. And she didn't include herself in that. Unless she's supposed to be one of the people. But she's not saying the boy is. And she's not saying we believe. So it's just interesting, just, you know, another little thing of evidence. Just look up and look it up and see how she's saying these things.
And I'm enjoying the way that Lotta is playing Galus.
Oh, she's brilliant.
There's so many layers to it.
So many layers. There's mystery, there's inquisitiveness, there's her own little interrogation of Claire in her own way. There's, we see later her with her husband. There's, you know, she thinks her husband's a fool. You know it, because she already...
Well, she tells him. She goes, he has no idea what
well,
guy
that,
is.
Well, that's in this episode. But yeah, it's just, even from the first time she met Claire, saying all these herbs can be used to do this and that, and are you trying to kill off your husband? Because if so, if it's going to work, let me, I might do give this to mine. I mean, she's free with her words, but definitely kind of a dance of words with back and forth with Claire.
Well, I think the difference is that... Well, no, I can't say that because it gives away what I know about her
Don't
character.
Don't say it. Yeah. So, to the Baxter residence for the first time.
This is really hard, you guys.
So, Angus, again, hello. Angus crosses himself after he's like, you're not going to go in, are you? And she goes in. Angus crosses himself and then, like, weighs backward over his right shoulder. What the heck? I did a quick little, I almost said doodle search. I did a quick little Google search. I couldn't find anything about waving over your shoulder or over your, or next to your, I don't know. So someone who knows about superstition in the 18th century or even today about waving back over your ear, what is that? There was no salt involved.
I don't know. All I know is that I almost felt bad for Angus in this episode. Having to chase her down.
That's true.
Wasn't his choice.
That's true. He had a job to do. And Father Bane is deliciously evil.
Oh my God, I wrote he's a beep survival blackjack.
So then we get to, she goes back, and we get to the kiss. The only thing I was sad about was there was no alcove. Unless you call that an alcove.
I mean, it could have been an alcove.
It could have been
a little... It depends on your point of view. Or it was definitely not in the main
no,
area.
No, it was an area
was.
Off the side.
We could call it an alcove.
So, well, there go Leary and Jamie kissing.
I think that Leary was definitely the aggressor in this. He definitely went along, but she pulled him in there. Which
of
was different
she did.
Because in the book... She was just sitting on his lap. We didn't see the lead
true.
Into it. So,
and I
this
think
was
it's
interesting.
I think it's,
but it feeds into the
funny.
Fact that her father was already accusing her of being loose. So,
so maybe it makes
so
you
maybe
think that she probably
she
may,
is.
May have been. She is. Whoa, hello, judgmental summer.
A little bit.
So,
18th century loose.
I wrote, LOL. Jamie totally grins at her. He looks up, and we know this. We already saw this teased. He looks up and sees Claire, and then sees that she sees him. Before he goes back in for more kissing, he totally grins. It's like, I don't know. It just makes me giggle.
He does. Okay, but leading into this next scene when they're at the table.
Yeah.
Like, I felt really bad for Jamie. I thought it was much more mean-spirited than I read it in the book. Like, the whole thing was played with much more of a mean-spirited feeling to it. Which, you know, plays into the fact that later she was like, nah, if I'd be honest, I was jealous. And that's why I did it, but... I just thought, I felt really bad for Jamie the way he played it because he wasn't really playful with it at all. And maybe that's because of the interchange. Maybe I would have thought it was less mean-spirited if he'd been more playful with his reactions to her. But because of the way he acted to her...
It was
her,
so fast, too.
Right. To her,
boom, 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 boom.
Right.
Shoe shot. Boom.
But because of the way he reacted to
he
it,
seemed
I
a little
felt,
bit hurt.
I felt bad.
He
I felt
did.
Bad
he
for
got,
him.
He got his hot potato booty at bottom out of there. Remember, there's no more booty or ass, it's bottom. I'm so happy that they did keep the table scene, though. It was very... I love the footsie.
Well, I loved it because it gave Murta his scene for the show, for this episode. We didn't,
there wasn't
much of him, but
I
this was
not,
a good scene for him. And I'm glad they kept it because it was, like, straight from the book.
I know we said this before. During our read-along, we love Murta.
Obviously.
And I think... In the series, which we know is adapted, it's based in the books, etc., but it is its own creation, and we appreciate it for its own, as its own thing. I am not in love like, oh my gosh, she's hot or anything like that, or, you know, Twitter painter or whatever, but I think after Tobias, I think I like Murta best. Not because I'm, like, attracted to Marta. Although he's not unattractive. He's just...
Okay.
I just like this. I love Marta.
I know, but here's what I will say about... It's Duncan LaCroix.
I think so, yeah.
Is that when they first popped his headshot out, I was like, okay. But he grew that beard and put a kilt on, and I was like, yes!
Give us Marta. Give us Duncan.
I'll take it. Anyway. So, but I liked that they added this in, and this is... like, literally the best description of Leary that you could give.
Oh, gosh.
That she'll be a girl in her
and it was, I think it was literally almost verbatim.
It is verbatim. It was awesome. I'm glad they kept it. I'm glad they kept it because literally if Nell ever needed to get a description of her character, that's the one line that she would need for the entire series.
Yeah. So Dougal invites Claire to Galus' house. And that's it. And I wrote, that's all I'm going to say about that. Except do not forget this.
Well, I'm leading.
Do not forget. Actually, yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, do not forget that Dougal invited her there. Dougal invited her to Gellis's house.
And leading into that, Claire had her little voiceover of, you know, I was mostly out of jealousy, but I wasn't jealous of their intimacy, and I was like, come on, Claire, be honest with yourself. Be honest with us. We know you were maybe a little bit jealous. You just didn't recognize it.
You just So as she's getting ready to go, I think it's on the way to Gillis' house or at Gillis' house, the voiceover. I think it's the voiceover. I don't think she says it to Gillis. She says that she feels like a stranger in a strange land. Inside?
She said that straight to her.
To Gillis? Okay.
Straight to Gillis.
So she says she feels like a stranger in a strange land. And she basically quotes Robert A. Heinlein.
Yeah. But he's not the first one who said that ever. It's just the title of one of his books.
I know. It was a good book,
by the way. You should look it up if you haven't.
Very, another book with a huge Christ figure. When Arthur comes in, he's like, who the F is Dolina? I had to leave that in there. Because he literally walks in, does not look at Claire. And when Claire asks a question, he's like, huh?
Dude, okay.
Made me laugh.
Here's what I want to say about... Okay, the first thing I wrote about him was, oh my God, Arthur the Flatulence. Because I
know his name, his title would be Archer the Flatulent.
My point, no, it was Arthur. Three exclamation points.
Got it.
The Flatulence! Exclamation point. It was funny, don't get me wrong, but it was just like, oh, how uncomfortable of a scene to be in if that was like honest to God truth.
Oh, man.
Like, if that was real, could you imagine hanging out with your friend and her husband
that would
comes
not
in
be my friend.
And just like,
oh, I see,
just like farts the room up for like 10 minutes.
I would have to go to the bathroom.
Oh, my God.
Or excuse myself, I had to go pick up my kids or go to the store or a doctor's appointment.
Oh, my gosh, that was
wash
like,
my hair.
Oh, awkward.
So, Gayla's totally in the whole scene, she totally steals the scene. Lotta does, as you already said, Lotta does such a wonderful job as the mysterious, beguiling. Gaelis. Anything more to say about Gaelis in this scene?
Well, not about Gaelis, but I thought that, honestly, Arthur was not as disgusting in looks as I thought he would be.
Oh.
I thought that in character, he was disgusting enough to fit the needs of the part. But in the looks, I just thought in the books he was described as being much more like... repulsive.
Mm-hmm.
But so he wasn't as hard to look at, but then he started farting and I was like, I get it. We're there.
So it's been a while since I've seen an ear nailed to a pillory, but the way they did it, it looked pretty realistic. It was pretty nice.
Just to go back one second.
Okay.
I thought that it was an interesting choice to bring Arthur into Galus's rooms.
Yeah.
So that way we could see the scene. Because everything is pretty much through Claire's point. So that way Claire got to be a part of it and we got to see it. So I thought it was an interesting choice to bring her in and let her participate. And then I go to the ear nailing.
And it looked pretty darn real.
It did. Now, one thing I would say is from the book is that
he cheated. He should not have been sitting.
Now, I assumed that it would be the lower portion of the ear.
Oh,
when I read it,
I
never.
Know why. Well, like
I
an
never,
earring.
Yeah, I never. Well,
you just
to
have
tear
a lot of
no, but to tear.
Hold on, that nail was like a horse nail.
It was a huge nail.
I never ever pictured a nail that was like a nail.
The
you don't
they
rip
then.
You don't rip your ear from that nail. You lose your ear to that nail.
No, you pull your ear off and hopefully pull the nail off, and you just you don't lose your.
You
whole
have
ear.
A whole,
you pull,
but
it
you're
going
to have a. Gouge in your ear the size
of
like
you are.
A dime.
But when I read
nickel.
The books, what I assumed is that it would be in the lower part of the ear and then
oh,
it would just tear free and you'd
oh.
have like a torn.
Okay, stop.
Really?
Really?
You say
enough.
You watch surgeries and I'm grossing you out right now?
I don't want to talk about ears.
Oh, okay. So back in her rooms, all I have to say about that is I wrote in very large letters, red shoes.
Well, that lovely.
Her giant red. I was like, oh my God, red shoes.
I love the choices that they either made for her or allowed Lotta to make.
So whoever fun. Did that, such a fun choice. I was like,
Okay. And I think, okay, I did not write this down. I did write down that I loved Galus's red shoes. But, and this may have nothing to do with nothing, but remember her interesting fashion choices.
Right.
For the, just remember it. It may or may not have a certain influence, that's all I'm going to say.
It's true, but they were hard to miss. Everything in that room was of muted color.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
And it was, you know, everything she wears is of muted color. And it was like this hidden indulgence.
Yes.
Where she's like, you know, kind of keeps that part of herself hidden. That's the wild part of her is in her shoes that you can't see.
Okay, so Galus, I wrote during this, back when we're back in her room, in her attic room, right? Galus is really trying to frag Claire aus. Mm-hmm. Now, I wrote, oops, that's German, that sounds dirty. She's basically trying to interrogate her in her own way. She is.
She's better at it.
She is better at it than
Colm and Dougal because it's understated. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could clearly see it because I wasn't part of the conversation, but... It was very obvious.
I don't think you're part of Colm and Claire's conversation either.
None of them.
They didn't invite us.
Nope. You. How rude. Anyway. But she even tried to continue. They even tried to continue this interrogation once Jamie showed up.
Yes. And I'll get to that. So Claire, she's trying to ask these questions a little bit here, a little bit there. She doesn't like keep pounding her. She kind of lets Claire say a little bit. And then her husband comes in. So there are little respites in there. But Claire doesn't give her much. She mentions that she was brought up in lots of places. And so that was something that may or may not kind of, you know, give a key. We know what that means. But Galus was probably even more inquisitive after hearing that. She wants to hear about, tell me about your upbringing and how it was. And I wrote, careful, Claire. And then Jamie comes in. And the way Galus is already lounging, I think. She kicks back, her feet are crossed. And that's when you see the red. They're about to, I think.
No, they were both
already
drinking
glasses of port. And I wrote, Galus really is hot to trot. She's really bummed that Jamie comes in at this one moment. And then Jamie says they must go. She says we must do it again. But the look she gives Jamie is like, she's like, tiger. She's very appreciative of his looks.
Now, what I wrote about this scene was that I thought it was, they did... And I hate to say they did a better job, because they didn't really do a better job than Diana. But what
happened... completely different.
Completely different. But when Jamie showed up in the books, it was just like, he didn't explain anything. He's just like, hey, I was told to bring you this cloak and bring you home. And I thought to myself, where the F is Dougal? He just like drops her off and didn't come back. He didn't stay. And then but they did in the series, he was like, Dougal got called back to the
whatever the F it's called. And if I'm not mistaken, in the book...
To Leok. He got called back to Leok, and wanted me to make sure that I came back to get you. And if I remember in the book, wasn't it raining?
I think it was. He brings her a cloak, right? Just like he did here. And if I'm not mistaken, this is also, when he comes to pick her up, the first time he calls her Sassanach. In the book.
Oh, that's way more specific than I'm willing to go right now.
I think it is. We haven't talked about it, but I could be wrong. I'm sure we'll be corrected, but yes. I think I may be right, but I could always be wrong. So back now, actually, literally outside with the pillory, I thought, the only thing I had to say about that, because that's almost literally from the book, and the only thing I had to say about that is the line, also from the book, I think.
Yeah, it is.
She doesn't like the sight of blood. It just makes me laugh, because, she's a healer. She stitches the people up.
Honestly, I felt bad for the people she knocked over onto the ground.
That was a major,
F-up.
I mean, dang, like, she knocked over, like, some dude's, like burning barrel? What is that?
Barrel of coals? I don't know.
A little thing you stand around, a hand warmer barrel?
I don't know. Is that for the people hanging out watching the dude?
Exactly. Hey, but this was entertainment.
I guess, but I was like, whoa, he just knocked over something that was on fire. And then I also noted that Jamie and Claire are making a very good team. Like, if this would be like one of those, like, 80s TV shows where they're like, right?
What is that supposed to be?
I have no idea.
Miami Vice.
Oh, Miami Vice?
Yes.
Okay.
I know
they make
that.
So Crockett and Tubbs?
Yes.
All right, so we'll call them Crockett and Tubbs.
No, don't ever call them that. I'm just saying my trying to represent that theme song was stupid.
I'm just saying they'd make a good team, like Heart to Heart.
Oh, they're great.
Like Heart to Heart. Like the 80s, you know, the lady and male team that solve mysteries and stuff.
And so then, this, again, huge deviation, but it definitely serves a purpose from the book, and we've already said this, they go to the Black Kirk.
Well, because in the book, and I won't give the specifics because Ginger's glaring at me, but in the books...
Not really. I will, though, if you want me to.
In the books, Jamie is basically... Well, he didn't really take much coercion, but Claire goes, hey, Jamie, come help me with this thing that'll totally get us both in trouble and have people think poorly of us. And he goes, okay. So, and that was a totally different situation in the books, but in the series, this is taking that place. I think it's going to take that place. Like, I think they're leaving the entire other instance out, and this is going to be...
I wouldn't be surprised. So, at the Black Kirk, Claire basically says... Okay, can you help me one more time, basically?
Right. She's like, hey, we were such a good team. Let's do this again,
heart to heart. So this is definitely a change from a book, but it's good and it fits. It's in the place of something else, which we won't mention. And I thought it was interesting, Wood Garlic and her saying that it was actually Lily of the Valley and that it's not native to Scotland. I said, first, when she says it, Jamie repeats it while looking at her with a half smile. And I love that he just... is looking at her and engaging
like,
and all that.
You're like Lily of the Valley for me.
Well, kind of. And I thought, okay, that's an interesting choice, right? Lily of the Valley. Lily is usually white, right? Or Lily White, the term Lily White. She's very pale. So one of the things that is not a spoiler is that through almost every single book of this series, her pale, pale skin is referred to. This is not a spoiler. She's pale. Homegirl, it's okay. From two
pasties. No. I just read a thing online today. I've decided I am marzipan.
She's marzipan. Anyway, marzipan. From one marzipan and one white pasty girl to a very fair chica, we understand.
We get it.
So the fact that it's a lily of whatever kind may or may not be related, and it may not have been chosen for this reason at all. It may actually physically look, and this makes more sense, it may physically look like wood garlic.
I imagine
which
it
would
does.
Be a better choice for something.
That would be a terrible reason to exchange it if it didn't look a thing like wood garlic.
Yes, so I'm sure that their researchers did that for that reason, but I'm just thinking it just happens to have the word lily in it, and she has pale skin, and that skin is referred to in, at this point, every single of the 8 books.
Right, and this was the instance I was referring to earlier when I said that it was the superstition versus scientific mind.
Yeah. And it will also, don't forget this, it will also likely come back to the story, something that she just happens to have a Latin name for and that is not native. And also the fact that she happens to know that the church was built by Prussian monks. Like, again, what is it with the German?
No, first she says German, and he goes, Germany. And she goes, I'm sorry, I mean Prussia. I assumed you would look that up. When did Prussia become Germany?
Well, Germany, as the modern state, became a country in 1871.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if that was the first time it was called, referred to as Germany. But the modern state of Germany became officially a country in 1871. Us German majors have to stick together, and that's one of the dates that's grilled into your minds.
I knew you'd know that.
I don't know.
She didn't even have to Google that, people. I didn't know that. She just looked at me and, like, blurted that answer out.
And that's usually not the case, but some things I remember. So then Baxter residence, take 2.
Yes.
I wrote, in all caps, go Mrs. Fitz!
Good
go
God.
Go Mrs. Fitz!
You know, it was like, it
this
was
woman,
so
oh, don't hold my hand.
I wasn't. You tried to hold my hand.
I did not.
You put your hand on my hand.
Whatever, go ahead.
Y'all, she was trying to hold my hand. Anyway, Mrs. Fitz, I thought that this was, it was so hard to watch her be bullied, basically, by this priest who was obviously, and that's like my main thing I have about him, is that he was just a big bully, a big religious bully. That it was so hard to watch her.
I don't know why it's funny. It's not funny.
To watch her in the first scene when they were in there just basically get, like...
butchered?
Not even butchered, but just, like...
told?
Kowtowed to him. You know, and told that, you know, whatever. And you could tell that this man is so used to being just, like, obeyed. That he's got such a... like, he uses religion as such a weapon, if you will. That it was so hard to watch that first scene where you knew that Mrs. Fitz was like, I know she can help him, but I'm too afraid to step up and say something about it. So to see her finally go,
look.
Claire knows what she's doing now. She's got a definitive answer for it. She thinks she can fix it. We're going to let it happen.
And I thought, okay, everybody, the castle people, Mrs. Baxter, Mrs. Fitz, everybody is happy that Claire saves the day. Everybody. But it's also convenient. Can you imagine what would have happened right then, not later on, right then, if he had died because of what she did? And she even said, she was saying, if it does this, or if it was too much or too little, or if I was wrong, he totally could have died.
Well, that was to build drama.
Come on.
Now, what I did also write about Father Bane, I said, bully, where's a pack of wild dogs when you need them?
That's coming up, because we read an article about that. That does exist. And then back in the hall, I wrote,
before that.
Okay.
I did also mention, I noticed that they were brushing the horses down with straw. So I'm going to need to talk to Lene about this.
Oh,
I'm sure it's accurate because they're being so accurate on everything else.
Anyway,
I thought that was an interesting thing that I was interested in looking into. So I'm going to have to talk to Lene about that and get back to you. But I noticed it. I was like, oh, he's brushing that horse down with straw. And then I thought miracle work, because everyone was saying, oh, it was a miracle. I said, that is defindefinitely going to backfire.
Being called a miracle worker. Terrible choice column, or Dougal or Doogie or whoever came up with that. I'm not talking about the writers. I'm talking about in the show.
Oh, yeah.
That was, yeah, not so fun. Like, not so good.
It never ends well.
So are we going to the hall now?
Yes, we can
okay,
go to the hall.
So in the hall, I wrote, I'll say this again, because I know you want to hear it. Rhaenish! Everywhere is a Rhaenish.
And I wrote alcoholic Claire.
Yes.
Because she even admitted to it. She was like, I wasn't even going to go down there tonight. But then all I wanted
was the Rhaenish.
Was the oblivion. Stop it. The oblivion of that Colum's Rhaenish could bring me.
So she gets on her Rhaenish. She gets on her Rhaenish.
And then Jamie comes running up. He's like, didn't you see me waving? I saved you a seat. Come on.
Like, Jamie, don't be too obvious here.
Right.
And then this is really the only one more thing to say, right? There's the bard sings, and Jamie is translating it. And as you hear it, they're bringing in this image of her being at the stones, right. And then also of her, quote unquote, going back and seeing Frank and all that. And it was a song about a woman at the stones on a fairy hill. And the whole point of it was after, and I have to say this part, after the people she met in the place where she was displaced to became friends. And lovers.
Yeah, lovers.
And then she does go back. And I wrote, dun, dun, dun. Well, keep that in mind, people.
What I wrote back was that... What I wrote...
What you wrote to Claire? I want to hear about this. Is Claire writing to you?
No, what I wrote was that... This was also... Okay, in the book, this was one scene that they've split into two scenes. It was one scene. He only dictated the Welsh bard one night.
And it wasn't this one.
It was one scene, and it was a different night. So, okay. They split it over several nights. So, that was the first thing I noticed. Secondly, the song about a person being displaced by the 200 years. That's the only real connection.
He didn't mention
connection.
200.
No, he didn't. But my point is this song that the bard sang in this episode was so much more specific to Claire's plight than the song in the book.
Yeah.
In the book, it was just, it was 200 years, it was a woman displaced, and all of these fairy tales always happened 200 years. So, it was an interesting choice. It was different, like I said, but I still enjoyed it. I think so far, every choice that they've made, I've been okay with.
Oh, I love it. We're not gonna lie. We're hardcore fans. It's pretty hard. It's basically, unless you leave out, like, their wedding, and that's not a spoiler, unless you, like, leave out something, like, along the lines of their wedding, you're not gonna tick us off. Go back 52 episodes. Hello. This is
Our
1 year anniversary. So go back 52 or 51 episodes. The only reason we do this is because we're so tickled that this is being made into a series. So it is in our best interest to support stars, no matter what your opinion is. Hopefully you like the show. But my point is, we know this is as Diana makes a very good point about, this is an adaptation. We know what that means. We know there will be differences and choices made because of the medium and because of the way things can or cannot be portrayed or adapted. We're fans of Diana's, and we're fans of this series being brought to film, to TV. So we are very interested in what changes that they make, but no matter what. And so far, they have made a few changes, it's totally things that work.
Well, what I've noticed is that so far, what I've seen, there have been changes to the plot,
yeah,
but not deviations from the plot.
Exactly.
So I'm a huge fan of getting more. Getting less would make me a little bit cranky. But getting more, it's always interesting. It's more.
Is, exactly. The things that they leave out or have to change are not going to be so much, from what we understand and from what we've seen so far, are not going to be along the lines of, like I said, oh my gosh, they don't get married. Or oh my gosh, they don't have...
They're not major plot deviations.
No, absolutely not. So far, in this book.
Right.
We don't know about other seasons because the books get longer,
etc. They haven't even written them yet.
But things that we see that are differences, we appreciate them as fans. We recognize that they're different, and that's part of our... No one else asked us to do this, but we did a podcast, so there you go. Part of our self-appointed job.
Yes.
Just because we want to, because we're talkative, and especially me, and we like to... Because we did the read-along, and we know the books decently well. We're not experts, but we know them decently well. We do notice what's either missing or what's different, and that's something that we want to point out, not to spoil, but to point out. And not in a bad way, just in an objective way of, oh, they did this, or oh,
well,
they did that.
For instance, in the book.
I mean, if I get upset, I will get upset.
No,
don't get me wrong.
No, and I mean, nobody's paying us to do this podcast. I mean, we're doing this because we love to do it.
Really?
For sure.
I don't know if I believe you.
For instance, it rained. It was raining when Jamie picked her up at Galus's and the pillory scene.
Mm.
Did it take anything away to have it not raining? No.
No.
I mean...
And quite frankly, it could have very well rained that day. And, I mean, no, it could have been because it's Scotland.
Right. Did I notice? Yes. Did it bother me? No. I mean, it's... Again, it's not anything that's so plot specific.
Yeah.
But that being said, I do want to point out that there was probably the only mention we're going to get to a water horse in the entire series at the Black Kirk.
Chapter 19, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think it's chapter 19.
The fact that you have that at your recall is terrifying to me.
I want
to
look it up right now.
Okay. The witchcraft that just occurred in this room is literally terrifying.
How is that witchcraft? Because I knew the number?
You knew it like auto-recall. Like,
hey, I have a good number for number. I have a good memory for numbers and dates.
You have a good number for memory?
I have a good number, people. I have a good memory for numbers and dates. Not all things, but hey, I whipped out the 1871. I whipped out the chapter 19.
Y'all.
What am I saying?
This was not okay. Like, she's like, I'm going to pull up my Kindle app and look it up. And when she said 19, she said it with such confidence that I was like, whatever, it's fine. It doesn't matter what chapter it was. It was in there. And she's like, I'm going to look it up. And then she pulls up her Kindle app and it was like, bam, 19. And I was like, oh God.
And I think the reason I remember it is because, again, I was so disappointed
that they left it out.
Well, I was so liking the chapter in the read-along because it's very short, number one. Easy to take notes on, okay? Because I'm the note taker and I'm
hey, I took notes. Leave me alone.
Not for the read-along, you don't.
No, but I took it for this.
Who cares?
I care. I care.
Anyway, so I think it's because it's such a touching chapter that she sees in the book. People, don't get upset that we're spoiling the book. It's not really even that important, but she sees a water horse and she recognizes another creature also out of time. That's it. It's very poignant to me.
I agree.
I loved it.
But like I said, I'm cool with them leaving it out because that's one less thing for them to F up. You know what I mean? Because I promise
up,
you,
we don't want
when you go
CGI,
heavy CG,
CGI?
Heavy, I always do that. When you go heavy CGI.
What is CG?
Just computer generated. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Just minus the eye. CG. When you go heavy CGI, you run the risk of it not looking real, and it's easier to just leave that crap out if you can and find another way to get that point across. So I'm actually okay with them leaving the water horse out.
And so, the very end, after she hears all the translation and she decides she needs to go back or die trying, I wrote, Claire, don't be so dramatic. But I guess she has nothing to lose.
Well, I mean, what else is she going to do? I mean, but what's... I mean, if her
stay
life...
there.
But if her life is all about Frank,
yeah,
she's losing nothing by trying to die. So I guess that wraps up our discussion of episode 103. Next week, do you know what the next episode title is?
Hello, we already talked about this. The Gathering.
The Gathering.
Which is a very magical episode. And one of the things that we saw in the preview for episode 104 is Dougal telling Claire that he wants her to accompany him on such and such and such and such. I don't even know if we got that detail. No, you and I know what they're doing, but we haven't heard.
Y'all.
Oh, exactly. As soon as they leave Leah
and they go doing whatever they're going to go doing.
Done and done.
It is just, okay, there is a point, and this is not that point, there is a point at which, and we'll get there, and we'll let you know, Ginger's favorite sequence, period, full stop. After that, it's balls to the wall to the end of the book. End of the book.
Oh, for sure.
However, hold on, it is, it is.
That's going to be in the second half of this.
There's a certain sequence after which...
Okay, I agree.
It's balls to the wall to the end of the book. However, once they leave Casa Liach for this reason that's coming up in episode 104... It's a mini version of that. The story starts to take off. So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Whee!
Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.
I dreamt it last night that my young